the podcast called?
What's up, gamers?
This is Hep's Podcast.
Oh, Hep's Podcast, number one iTunes store, coming out next week. How do we get, okay, we're going in. Bye, thank you.
Can I just say that dude knew what was up, yo.
This is Parker Corey from Ender's Reserve, and you're listening to WMFO Medford.
So then we have the SOS band with SOS. Very nice cover art. And of course, this contains the classic "Take Your Time" (parentheses) "Do It Right." For those of you who understand this, it's the Heritage song. I'm really glad I found this on vinyl. It was $1, and this is very valuable to me. This is Cursor. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Subbing for John Fuller, and this is Man on the Moon. Man on the Moon, Eagle Has Landed.
Astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Roger, we got a roll.
Tower cleared.
Roger, roll.
July 16, 1969. Colonel Edwin E. Aldrin, Jr., Lieutenant Colonel Michael Collins, and Neil A. Armstrong riding atop a mighty Saturn V rocket, snug in their Apollo 11 command module, lifting off from Cape Kennedy to begin a 251,000-mile flight to the moon and a rendezvous with man's closest celestial neighbor. An adventure for mankind and the fulfillment of a national goal set 8 years earlier. In those years, other men had flown in spaceships, and some had flown to and around the moon. But Apollo 11's two spacecraft, the command ship Columbia and the lunar module Eagle, were to take men to the moon and put two of them on her surface. In the first critical minutes of the Apollo 11 flight, the decision had to be made whether Apollo could leave the Earth's environment and begin the long journey toward the moon. Translunar injection. TLI.
Apollo 11, this is Houston. You are go for TLI. Over.
Apollo 11, thank you.
Roger out.
A crucial moment, the firing of Columbia's rocket to put Apollo 11 on her path to the moon.
Mission.
We confirm ignition and the thrust is go. Houston at 1 minute. Trajectory and guidance look good, and the stage is good. Over.
Apollo 11, Roger.
35,000 feet per second. Cut off. Going velocity 35,570 feet per second. Altitude 177 nautical miles.
Peg Houston, Apollo 11, that Saturn gave us a magnificent ride. Roger, 11, we'll pass that on, and it certainly looks like you're well on your way now.
On their way to the moon, their two spaceships linked together, the Apollo 11 crew presented the first of a number of television broadcasts. Their transmission originating 130,000 miles from Earth.
Houston, the definition is pretty good on our monitor here. The color's not too varsity, at least on this set. Could you describe what you're looking at? Over.
Roger, you're seeing Earth as we see it at our left-hand window. It's a little more than a half Earth. We're looking at the eastern Pacific Ocean, and the north half of the top half of the screen, we can see North America, Alaska, United States, Canada, Mexico, and Central America. South America becomes invisible just off beyond the terminator or inside the shadow. Can see the oceans with a definite blue cast. See white bands of major cloud formations across the Earth, and can see coastlines. Pick out western U.S. San Joaquin Valley, the Sierra Mountain Range, the peninsula of Baja California, and the cloud formations over
Astronauts seemed at ease and taking their epic voyage in stride, but the men on Earth at the Houston Manned Space Flight Center could hardly control their excitement as the astronauts televised again, this time showing Buzz Aldrin climbing into the lunar module, docked to the Columbia command ship.
Well, in Houston, we're really amazed at the quality of the picture up in the tunnel. It's really superb, over.
That is considering the amount of light up in there.
Roger, we're about to open the hatch now.
Right. Buzz Aldrin reporting that he's halfway into the LEM. This view is inside the LEM cabin.
Hey, that's a great shot right there. We see you in there. Guess that's Neil and Mike. Better be, anyway. We see you waving.
Aldrin has apparently carried the camera into the LEM with him, showing as Neil Armstrong and Mike Collins back in the CSM.
But as Apollo 11 hurtled toward the moon, the tricky business of putting the spacecraft into orbit around the moon. Saturday, July 19th, LOI, Lunar Orbit Insertion.
Apollo 11, this is Houston, over.
Roger, go ahead, Houston, final 11.
11, this is Houston. You are go for LOI, over.
Roger, go for LOI.
And then Columbia Eagle, Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins slipped behind the moon.
Apollo 11, this is Houston. All your systems are looking good going around the corner. We'll see you on the other side, over.
Roger. Everything looks okay up here.
Roger out.
And we've had loss of signal as Apollo 11 goes behind the moon.
Behind the moon, out of sight, out of communication. Long minutes and crucial ones as Apollo 11 fires its engine behind the moon to go into orbit. On Earth, men wait for the spaceship to reappear. They wait for AOS, acquisition of signal.
Madrid AOS. Madrid AOS.
Hey, loud clear, Houston LS.
Roger, reading you the same now. Could you repeat your burn status report? We copied the residuals and burn time, and that was about it. Send the whole thing again, please.
It was right perfect. Your Delta Tick 0, burn time 557. Can values on the angle, VGX minus 0.1, VGY minus 0.1, VGZ plus 0.1, no trim, minus 6.8 on Delta PC. Fuel was 38.8, Mach 39.0, plus 50 on balance. We ran an increase on the puck, down 44, showed us, 60.9 by 169.9.
But you can't keep a secret and you never get a word in. Why don't you keep me in the loop? Oh, I can post it.
So we're getting a beautiful picture in down here now. 11, the colors coming in quite clearly. Now, we can see the horizon and the relative blackness of space. And, without getting into the question of gray and brown, which is at least on that monitor, the brown is gray.
Americans on Earth, it is Saturday, then Sunday, July 20th. But for the three men of Apollo, Earth time no longer has meaning. They use Sunday for final checks of the Eagle lunar landing craft and preparations for the landing on the moon. Once again, behind the moon, they perform a vital maneuver, separation of the LM from the command ship. The men of Earth wait for AOS, Wait for the signal from Columbia and Eagle.
Roger, Eagle, sun dot.
Roger, how does it look?
The Eagle has wings.
Roger.
Looking good.
Roger, Neil, we got a, if you give us poo and data, we got the loads for you.
The Eagle has wings. And those imaginary wings, the LEM does not actually have wings, must now carry Eagle down to an altitude of 50,000 feet. The maneuver begins behind the moon, and once again, Earth waits for acquisition of signal from the two ships.
We are now coming up on 30 seconds to acquisition of the command module. And we'll stand by for that event.
Columbia, Houston, over.
Houston, Columbia, reading you loud and clear, how many?
Roger, bye-bye, Mike. How did it go, over?
Listen, baby, everything's going just swimmingly. Beautiful.
Great. We're standing by for Eagle.
Okay, he's coming along.
We copy out.
Good Eagle, how do you read?
Bye-bye, Eagle. We're standing by for your burn report, over.
Roger, the burn was on time. The residuals before nulling, -0.1, -0.4, -0.1, X and Z null to zero.
And now three new initials, PDI, Powered Descent Initiation. In ordinary language, beginning the landing on the moon.
Eagle, Houston, we read you now. You're a go for PDI, over.
Roger, understand. Hi, son. One, zero. Mission 10%.
That's 20 seconds. Everything looking good. We show altitude about 47,000 feet. Good radar data. Altitude now 33,000.
By George, that was good, boys. By George, here comes George. George Morgan, I mean. One of the finest singers that anybody's ever had the pleasure of listening to. And from a collection of his great country favorites, here's George singing Almost.
In love with me, almost you were my bride to be, but each promise that was made you have broken and betrayed. You've left me with a faded my precious dreams came almost. You whispered, dear,
we made 10 to lose as we gradually pitch over. Let me try auto again.
But
see what happens.
Someone new came by.
Okay, it looks like it's
and
home.
You left
we got good data.
Me here to cry. Oh, how close.
We're go. Same time. We're go. down at 9.
Almost.
Keep forward.
your heart I did possess. Almost you brought me happiness. But dreams just won't come true. And there's nothing I can do.
One and a half down.
Oh, how close we were. Almost.
That's a shadow up there. 50 down at 2.5. 19 forward. Altitude velocity light. 3.5 down. 220 feet. 13 forward. Coming down nicely, 200 feet. 4.5 down. 5.5 down. Within 60 feet. 6.5 down. 5.5 down. 9 forward. Good. Within 20 feet. 100 feet. 3.5 down. 9 forward. 5%. 185. 75 feet. That's looking good. Down a half. 6 forward. 60 seconds. Lights on. 6. Down 2.5. Forward. Forward. Good. 40 feet down 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Great shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward. Drifting to the right a little. Ready? Down a half.
30 seconds.
Forward. Just. Good. Ready? 8. Backlight. Okay, engine stop. APA at a descent. Load control, both auto descent engine plan override off.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
La 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 la.
La 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 la
depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine. I'm going to step off the land now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
I'm at the foot of the ladder. The LAM footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine. Yeah, I'm going to step off the LAM now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. The surface is fine and powdery. I can pick it up loosely with my toe. It does adhere in fine layers, like powdered charcoal, to the sole and sides of my boots.
The time on Earth, 10:56 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, July 20th, 1969. A man has stepped on the surface of the moon. Neil Armstrong, an American, looking cumbersome in a white spacesuit, but moving easily and gracefully in the 1/6 gravity of the moon. The world watches and listens on live television, and in a little while, the second man to walk on the moon, Edwin Aldrin, comes down Eagle's ladder.
Make sure not to lock it on my way up. Particularly good thought. That's our home for the next couple of hours. We want to take good care of it. Okay, I'm on the top step, and I can look down over the RCU and landing gear pad. It's a very simple matter to hop down from one step to the next.
Yes, I'm going to be very comfortable, and walking is also very comfortable. You've got 3 more steps, and then a long one.
Okay, I'm going to leave that 1 foot up there, and both hands down about the 4th rung up.
There you go.
Okay, now I think I'll do the same.
2 more. About another inch. There, you got it?
That's a good step.
Yep. About a 3-footer.
Beautiful view.
Isn't that something? Magnificent sight out here.
Magnificent desolation.
2 hours and 31 minutes will pass before the two men are back in their spaceship. And in that time, they will have a full schedule of work. Astronaut Armstrong uncovers a plaque on the LAM to mark this most historic of all moments.
For those who haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LAM. There's 2 hemispheres, one showing each of the 2 hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969 AD. It came in peace for all mankind. It has the crew members' signatures and the signature of the President of the United States."
The President of the United States himself reached out across the Gulf of Space to speak not only for himself, but all the world. Mission Control in Houston put through the call.
Tranquility Base, this is Houston. Can we get both of you on the camera for a minute, please?
Base
again, Houston.
Roger, we'd like to get both of you in the field of view of the camera from
Roger, we'd like to get both of you in the field of view of the camera from us.
Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you, over.
Would be an honor.
Go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston out.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you see. For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives. And for people all over the world, I am sure they too join with America in recognizing what an immense feat this is. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. For one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this Earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done, and one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
Dear Mr. President, it's a great honor and privilege for us to be here representing not only the United States, but and a peace of all nations, and with interest and a curiosity and with a vision for the future. Honor for us to be able to participate here today.
And thank you very much, and I look forward, all of us look forward to seeing you on the Hornet on Thursday.
Look forward to that very much, sir.
But before that rendezvous back on Earth, Armstrong and Aldrin had more work to do, collecting samples of rock and soil from the moon, pictures to take, and the takeoff.
Looking for some sweet, great tasting snacks that are also healthy for you? Try eating dried fruits. Dried figs, apples, cherries, bananas, apricots, peaches, pears, pineapples, raisins, cranberries, prunes, blueberries, mangoes, and oh, so many other fruits are both tasty and good for you. Many dried fruits are an excellent natural source of cancer-fighting dietary fiber. Read the labels to understand which brands have added sugars, preservatives, and other ingredients. But no matter what, eating pretty much any kind of dried fruit is going to be better for you than candy or a processed snack. A public service message from all the fruits and nuts here at WMFO in Medford, Tufts. Educational Radio.
Roger, go ahead.
Roger, our guidance recommendation is pings, and you're cleared for takeoff.
Roger, understand. We're number one on the runway.
Roger.
For the first time, a spacecraft takes off from the moon.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, work stage, engine arm ascent, proceed. Shadow, beautiful. 26, 36 feet per second up. 5, put a pitch over. Very smooth.
Off the moon's surface, Eagle looks for and finds Columbia. the command ship with astronaut Collins waiting to link up with Eagle, then swinging behind the moon again to fire their engine for TEI, trans-earth injection, heading home.
Hello, Apollo 11, Houston, how did it go, over? Let's open up the LRL doors, Charlie.
Roger, we got you coming home. It's well stocked.
In the language of the astronauts, LRL means the Lunar Receiving Laboratory, where they and their moon samples will be in quarantine for a time after their return to Earth. And as they sped back to their home, each of the astronauts summed up what this adventure meant.
This is the commander of Apollo 11. 100 years ago, Jules Verne wrote a book about a voyage to the moon. His spaceship, Columbia, took off from Florida, landed the Pacific Ocean after completing a trip to the moon. Seems appropriate to us to share with you some of the reflections of the crew as the modern day Columbia completes its rendezvous with the planet Earth in the same Pacific Ocean tomorrow. First, Mike Collins. Roger, this trip of ours to the moon may have looked to you simple or easy. I'd like to assure you that that has not been the case. The Saturn V rocket which put us into orbit is an incredibly complicated piece of machinery, every piece of which works flawlessly. This computer up above my head has a 38,000 word vocabulary, each word of which has been very carefully chosen to be of the utmost value to us, the crew. This switch, which I have in my hand now, has over 300 counterparts in the command module alone, this one single switch design. In addition to that, there are myriads of circuit breakers, levers, rods, and other associated controls. The FPS engine, our large rocket engine, on the aft end of our service module, must have performed flawlessly or we would have been stranded in lunar orbit. The parachute up above my head must work perfectly tomorrow or we will plummet into the ocean. We have always had confidence that all this equipment will work and work properly, and we continue to have confidence that it will do so for the remainder of the flight. All this is possible only through the blood, sweat, and tears of a number of people. First, the American workmen who put these pieces of machinery together at the factory. Second, the painstaking work done by the various test teams during the assembly and the retest after assembly. Finally, the people at the manned spacecraft center, both in management, in mission planning, in flight control, and last but not least, in crew training. This operation is somewhat like the periscope of a submarine. All you see is the three of us, but beneath the surface are thousands and thousands of others. To all those, I would like to say thank you very much.
11, this is Houston. We're getting a good picture of Buzz now, but no voice modulation. And would you open up the f-stop on the TV camera? Try 22, please. It appears to be a lot better now. We're still not receiving Buzz's audio.
Good evening. I'd like to discuss with you a few of the more symbolic aspects of the flight of our mission Apollo 11. As we've been discussing the events that have taken place in the past 2 or 3 days here on board our spacecraft, we've come to the conclusion that this has been far more than three men on a voyage to the moon. More still than the efforts of a government and industry team. More even than the efforts of one nation to feel that this stands as a symbol
of the insatiable curiosity of all mankind to explore the unknown. Neil's statement the other day upon first setting foot on the surface of the moon, "This is a small step for a man, but a great leap for mankind," I believe sums up these feelings very nicely. We accepted the challenge of going to the moon. The acceptance of this challenge was inevitable. The relative ease with which we carried out our mission, I believe, is a tribute to the timeliness of that acceptance. Today, I feel we're fully capable of accepting expanded roles in the exploration of space. In retrospect, we have all been particularly pleased with the call signs that we very laboriously chose for our spacecraft, Columbia and Eagle. We've been particularly pleased with the emblem of our flight, depicting the U.S. Eagle, bringing the universal symbol of peace from the Earth, from the planet Earth, the moon, that symbol being the olive branch. With our overall crew choice to deposit a replica of this symbol on the moon. Only in reflecting the events of the past several days, a verse from the Psalms comes to mind to me. I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Responsibility for this flight lies first with history and with the giants of science who have preceded this effort. Next to the American people who have, through their will, indicated their desire. Next to four administrations, their congresses, for implementing that will. And then to the agency and industry team that built our spacecraft. The Saturn, the Columbia, the Eagle, and the little EMU, the spacesuit and backpack that was our small spacecraft out on the lunar surface. I'd like to give a special thanks to all those Americans who built those spacecraft. Did the construction, design, the test, and put their heart. Your abilities into those crafts. To those people, tonight we give a special thank you. And to all the other people that are listening and watching tonight, a question. Good night from Apollo 11.
Thursday, July 24th, 1969. Splashdown in the Pacific. And although they were shielded in quarantine, a welcome for the Apollo 11 crew aboard the recovery ship Hornet by Richard M. Nixon, President of the United States.
Neil, Buzz, and Mike, I want you to know that I think I'm the luckiest man in the world. And I say this not only because I have the honor to be President of the United States, but particularly because I have the privilege of speaking for so many and welcoming you back to Earth. I can tell you about all the messages we received in Washington. Over 100 foreign governments, emperors and presidents and prime ministers and kings have sent the most warm messages that we've ever received. They represent over 2 billion people on this Earth, all of them who have had the opportunity through television to see what you have done. And then I also bring you messages from members of the Cabinet and members of the Senate and members of the House and the Space Agency, from the streets of San Francisco, where people stopped me a few days ago, and you all love that city, I know, as I do. But most important, I had a telephone call yesterday. The toll wasn't incidentally as great as the one I made to you fellows on the moon. I made that collection for that video, in case you didn't know. But I called three of the greatest ladies and most courageous ladies in the whole world today, your wife. And from Jan and Joan and Pat, I bring their love and their congratulations. We think it's just wonderful that they could have participated at least through television in this return. We're only sorry they couldn't be here. And also, I've got to let you in a little secret. I made a date with them. I invited them to dinner on the 13th of August, right after you come out of quarantine. It will be a state dinner held in Los Angeles. The governors of all the 50 states will be there, the ambassadors, others from around the world and in America. And they told me that you would come too. And all I want to know, will you come? We want to honor you there.
I'll do anything you say, President.
Anytime. One question I think that all of us would like to ask, as we saw you bouncing around in that boat out there, I wonder if that wasn't the hardest part of the journey. Was that the only, did any of you get seasick?
No, we didn't, and it was one of the harder parts, but it was one of the most pleasant, we can assure you.
Yeah. Well, I just know that you can sense what we all sense when you get back now. You've been able to follow some of the things that happened when you've gone. Did you know about the All-Star Game?
Yes, sir. The Capital Communicators have been giving us daily news reports.
Yeah. Were you American League or National League?
I'm a National League man.
I'm not part of it.
Yeah, that's right. There's the politician in the group. Right.
We're sorry you missed that game.
Yes. Well, oh, you knew that too.
You really heard that
The rain.
The rain. Right. Well, we haven't learned to control the weather yet, but that's something we can look forward to tomorrow's challenge.
Right, right. Well, I can only summarize it because I don't want to hold you now. You have so much more to do. And see, you look great. You feel as good as you look.
Feel
great.
Feel just perfect, yeah. Mr. President.
Yeah. Are you? I understand you're. Frank Borman says you're a little younger by reason of having going into space. Is that right? Do you feel that way, a little younger?
We're a lot younger than Frank Borman.
There he is over there. Come on over, Frank, so they can see you. And you going to take that line down? Are they young?
It looks like he has aged in the last couple of weeks.
Come on, Frank.
Mr. President, the one thing I want is, you know, we have a poet in Mike Collins, and he really gave me a hard time for describing you words of fantastic and beautiful. And you were, I counted them, in 3 minutes up there, you used four fantastics and two beautifuls.
Well, just let me close off with this one thing. I was thinking, as you know, as you came down, and we knew it was a success, and it had only been 8 days, just a week, a long week. But this is the greatest week in the history of the world since the creation. Because as a result of what happened in this week, the world is bigger infinitely. And also, as I'm going to find on this trip around the world, and the Secretary Rogers will find that he covers the other countries in Asia. As a result of what you've done, the world's never been closer together before. And we just thank you for that. And I only hope that all of us in government, all of us in America, that as a result of what you've done, we can do our job a little better. We can reach for the stars just as you have reached so far from the stars. We don't want to hold you any longer. Anybody have a last word? How about promotion? Do you think we could arrange something?
Well, I'm just pleased to be back and very honored that you were so kind to come out here and welcome us back. And we look forward to getting out of this quarantine and talking without having glasses between us.
All right. Incidentally, the speeches that you have to make at this dinner can be very short. And if you want to say fantastic or beautiful, that's all right with us. Don't try to think of any new adjectives. They've all been said.
Reserve, and you're listening to WMFO Medford.
When night is gone, that a new world's born at dawn, I'll keep rolling along. Deep in my heart is a song.
At the foot of the ladder, the lamb footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine. Okay, I'm going to step off the lamb now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. The surface is fine and powdery. I can pick it up loosely with my toe. It does adhere in fine layers, powdered charcoal to the sole and insides of my boots.
The time on Earth, 10:56 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, July 20th, 1969. A man has stepped on the surface of the moon. Neil Armstrong, an American, looking cumbersome in a white spacesuit, but moving easily and gracefully in the 1/6 gravity of the moon. The world watches and listens on live television. And in a little while, the second man to walk on the moon, Edwin Aldrin, comes down Eagle's ladder.
Make sure not to lock it on my way up.